Thanks, blessings, Zulu. Good evening, Zimbabwe. It's 17 hours 20 UTC, 7:20 p.m. in Zimbabwe on Saturday, May 16th, 2015. You are listening to Studio 7 live from the Voice of America in Washington. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Gibbs Dube. Here are our top stories this evening. A recipient of the Mandela Washington Fellowship for Young African Leaders says she hopes to benefit from the program, which starts in U.S. next month. Students at Zimbabwe's colleges and universities say life is tough at colleges and after completing their studies.
One of the things that I've always hoped to do is to inspire the people in the ghetto areas where I come from, especially women, to advance their education.
And a depleted Warriors side is worried about lack of preparations for the COSAFA tournament. A Zimbabwean legal practitioner, Regina Boanali, who has been selected for the prestigious Mandela Washington Fellowship for Young African Leaders, is happy that she will be able to acquire good skills in America for transforming her community. She is among 30 Zimbabweans selected by the U.S. Embassy in Harare to take part in the program starting next month, initiated by President Barack Obama. Boanali, who works for the Chambers Advocates of Zimbabwe, speaks to Studio 7 about her participation in the program.
I usually call myself the Malawian girl from Glenview. I was born to Malawian parents, bred in the suburb or in the ghettos in Glenview, did my primary and high school education from 1 to 4 at Glenview 1 High School, and my advanced level at Harare High School. Thereafter, I was accepted into law school at the University of Zimbabwe, where I proceeded in my final year to represent the university at the ICRC International Humanitarian Law Competition in 2010. We emerged as the national champions against Midland State University. We proceeded to the Pan-African edition of the same competition in Arusha, Tanzania. We lost to Rhodes in the final. Thereafter, I finished my degree in 2011, went for the Center for Applied Legal Research. In 2012, January, I was accepted into the firm Gambia and Partners, and then I was called to the bar to join the Advocate Chambers. Then, under the privilege of the now Justice Show, I remained at Chambers until 2011 to now join the now B Chambers as an advocate.
What do you think are the benefits of this kind of fellowship that you can, you know, plow back into the community?
One of the things that I've always hoped to do is to inspire the people in the ghetto areas where I come from, especially women, to advance their education, and for those who are not already educated to attain a minimum qualification. I grew up in a family where my father did not believe in girl child education, and by close to high school, I was being educated by the church. By close to university, I was kind of schooling myself. So I believe that if you are educated, you are emancipated, you are able to contribute meaningfully to the society, and you're also able to determine how to deal with issues that relate to your rights. So I hope that when I return, I'll be involved in projects that relate to girl child education. And there's also a disability institute or project that I was working with, which I also hope to actively participate, teach them the meaning of disability rights pertaining to the new constitution.
And definitely you are going to be meeting President Barack Obama. How do you feel?
Indeed. I feel excited and also, as I said, humbled to meet him. I'll not only be meeting him, I believe I'll also be meeting Michelle Obama. And for a person of my caliber to meet two of the world's greatest lawyers, it is an inspiration, and it makes me realize that I too can rise. If Obama could rise, if Michelle could rise, I can rise.
That was Regina Boanali of the Chambers Advocates of Zimbabwe speaking with Studio 7 from Harare. She is one of the recipients of the Mandela Washington Fellowship for Young African Leaders. Meanwhile, a 263 chat, a media company created to encourage participation in Zimbabwe's issues, this week hosted a panel discussion on human rights dubbed Eyes on Human Rights. The panel was attended by some representatives of civil society groups and a U.S. envoy that was visiting the country, Stephen Feldstein, Assistant Secretary in the Bureau of Democracy, Human Rights and Labor. Reporter Tatiana Gumbo spoke to Justina Makoko, who attended the event.
One of the highlights was the disappearance of Itai Jamara. There was a sense from the cloth that there is a lot of attention that has been given to the matter. But I think what has been expressed is the fact that one abduction is one human, and there is reason for citizens of Zimbabwe to know that they are all like Itai Jamara.
Were there any resolutions from this panel, in particular as you're talking about the issue of human rights, looking at Itai Dzamara, where many of the panelists said that Itai Dzamara can be anyone in Zimbabwe?
I think the resolution really was that we just need to be able to unite and say we are all Itai Dzamara, so that we can all be affected by what is affecting each other.
That was Justina Makoko, National Director of the Zimbabwe Peace Project, speaking with Studio 7 from Harare. Two formations of the MTC announced last year that they had signed a memorandum of understanding pending their merger, which was initially penciled for June this year. However, the announcement last week that the MTC renewal team will be holding an elective congress in August this year appears to have scuppered the unification, according to the Welshman Ncube Formation. The party spokesman, Joshua Mhambi, tells Studio 7's Chris Gande there are now some doubts about the merger.
By deduction, I think our colleagues are repudiating the agreements that we set and the landmarks and stuff that needed to be achieved at a particular moment. You also recall that this is a group of people that came at the launch and made confessions about being slow to see the truth and see the light. They were 15 years behind the MTC. So they came to us and said they are sorry for inviting you. They had not seen the light and so forth. So we are assuming they are living up to their tradition of seeing the urgency of certain things a little bit late. What has been worrying are statements that are being made now, which seem to suggest that we are no longer following the plan that we had.
That was spokesman Joshua Mhambi of the MTC formation led by Welshman Ncube, speaking with Studio 7 from Bulawayo. MTC renewal team spokesperson Jacob Mafume says the unification is going on well.
I think there are areas where there could be some unhappiness in terms of the speed at which it is moving, in terms of where we ought to have been at this point in time in terms of our roadmap. And I think the feeling would be mutual on that accord. But we hasten to add that there has been a lot of things that have happened since then. As you know, our MPs were removed from Parliament by Morgan Tsvangirai working together with ZANU-PF. So we needed to correct that and be able to deal with that. So that preoccupied most of our time.
That was Jacob Mafume, the spokesperson of the MTC renewal team, speaking with Studio 7 from Harare.
Direct from Washington, the voice of America, VOA.
Students at Zimbabwe's colleges and universities are having a torrid time as they are failing to raise money to pay tuition and related costs. It becomes worse when students finish their studies as the job market is shrinking due to company closures owing to the harsh economic environment in Zimbabwe. For perspective, we reached a former Zimbabwe student, Hatina Wedu Mupiwa, who recently completed science and mathematics studies in America, and Tumisani Muyambo Machinjirise of Great Zimbabwe University. Mupiwa says students in Zimbabwe are benefiting from the education system, even if they are learning under difficult conditions.
I think the approach to our Zimbabwean education system, I may not have solutions, but one thing that I see should be done is to have adequate compensation for the teaching force. Another thing that could be done is a revision of like our syllabus, and then also provision of adequate resources to schools. I mean, it also depends on the status of the economy and how parents are actually willing to pay for school fees. because it turns out that at times it's better for you to pay a high price so that at the end of the day, when the student is done with school, they have something to show up.
What do you think about that, Mr. Machinjirise?
There should be a learning environment that is so good for us, for the students, so that they will see the bright future ahead of them. So it will give them the ability to work hard so that they will be the leaders tomorrow.
So now, if everything is done, you know, if students have to pay the price in the meantime, but they don't get jobs in the near future, does it pay at all, Mr. Mopio?
In the short run, it doesn't seem to, but in the long run, I think it does. Because once you get like a good education, one might be able to go and find a job abroad. Or in the near future, you never know, things are going to change for the better. And you still have the qualifications. It doesn't matter when you get them. If you still have the qualifications, then you're good to go. Like right now, some people have actually lost track of their future because they couldn't make it. And right now, they have nothing to show when things change.
Mr. Muchinjelisa, do you think that you have got a bright future with your colleagues there?
Yeah, we hope that one day it will be okay. But, bro, we expect something better after going to school for 4 years and after starving on attachment that you'll be working for nothing, just working, just a community service. But we hope that having a document, having a degree, having a certificate, one day it will be better.
Let's talk about the courses that the two of you have been doing, Mr. Machinjirise. You are doing English and Communications, but do you think that there are some jobs out there demanding that kind of course?
Yeah, I have the hope that I will get a job. There are lots of retrenchments and everything like that, but I really believe that it will be okay. But to be employed from the media or employed by any company, public relations, it will be difficult. But as in teaching, I will just go where others are going.
Mr. Mopiwa, do you think that there are specific courses that may be on demand internationally, like yours, mathematics, computers, and so forth? And what Mr. Machinjirise maybe is doing may not be marketable overseas. What do you think?
I think most of the majors or degrees here are marketable in the U.S. or globally. For example, communications, we're talking about sociology and psychology. But you actually have to be achieving really, really high, because the number of jobs out there are low. But for what I did, I did mathematics and computer science, the demand is really, really high. And if you achieve high, it improves like how you're going to be paid when you finish school. For example, I did computer science and math, and I did like really, really well. And I got the opportunity to get hired by a big global company, Goldman Sachs.
That was former Zimbabwean student Atinawetu Mupiwa, who recently completed science and mathematics studies in America, speaking with Studio 7 from Kentucky, USA. You also heard from Tumisani Muyambo Machinjirise of Great Zimbabwe University, speaking with Studio 7 from Maswingo. You are listening to Studio 7 live from the Voice of America in Washington. And now, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States continues to find new ways to support global entrepreneurship. At a time when the world is more interconnected than ever, said President Barack Obama, we've got unprecedented opportunities to help more people access capital and resources and networks that they need to succeed. Youth around the world are particularly in need of greater opportunities. More than half the world's population is under the age of 30, and in some countries, youth unemployment can exceed 35%. When so many young people don't see a future for themselves, it holds an entire nation back. That's why the United States seeks to train and empower thousands of aspiring entrepreneurs. As part of its Young African Leaders Initiative, the U.S. offers training and grants and online resources and courses and leadership centers to help young entrepreneurs build businesses in Africa. In Southeast Asia, the U.S. has connected young people across the ASEAN countries through the Young Southeast Asian Leaders Initiative. The U.S. has also launched an initiative for young entrepreneurs in the Caribbean and Latin America. All told, the U.S. has set a goal of generating $1 billion in new investment for emerging entrepreneurs worldwide by 2017. Half of this money will go to support young entrepreneurs and women entrepreneurs. The program, known as the Spark Global Entrepreneurship Initiative, will bring together some of the most successful entrepreneurship programs across the government and make sure that they're working with the private sector in ways that allow for long-term sustained success. Some of America's most successful business leaders and innovators are joining this effort. One of those is Julie Hanna, who will use her expertise leading Kiva to increase access to capital around the world. Her project commits to delivering $100 million in crowdfunded loans to 200,000 women and young entrepreneurs across 86 different countries. With the Spark Global Entrepreneurship Initiative, said President Obama, we can make sure that anyone who's got the creativity and drive to work hard, no matter where they're from, what they look like, what their background is, they get a fair shot at pursuing their dreams. And we'll all be better for it.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
And finally, in sports news, Warriors coach Calisto Pasua is crying foul over lack of training by his squad ahead of the Akosafa excursion. Our correspondent Michael Cariati gives us the story.
The Warriors trained only for 3 days before departure for the tournament, which will be held in South Africa from May 17 to 23. The Warriors have 4 COSAFA Senior Challenge titles to their credit, but Pasua is not happy with the way in which they've prepared for this tournament.
To prepare a team when going for a tournament like this one, it's not a one-game thing where we say maybe we're going to play Swaziland and then we come back home. But we're playing different countries. We wanted as much maybe to have these players knowing how we want to play defensively, offensively, then tactically, maybe the way we want to defend also.
The four-time Castle Lager Premier Soccer League title holder is of the opinion that the short training time will have some far-reaching repercussions on his team's combination.
The potential is there, but again, it's the communication combinations which affects most when you come to the national team. You need more days, maybe in terms of preparations.
The Zimbabweans will face Mauritius, Namibia and Seychelles. They begin their account against lightweight Mauritius on Sunday, but Pasua is not taking his opponents for granted.
By mere looking at the names, you say we're playing small teams, but there are no more small teams in Africa.
The Warriors, who were on the verge of missing out of the tournament due to lack of funds, had to be rescued by self-proclaimed prophet Walter Magaya, who donated $54,000. Meanwhile, the Zimbabwe cricket team has suspended its tour of Pakistan this month following a directive from the Minister of Foreign Affairs through the Sports and Recreation Commission. A statement from the spokesperson of Zimbabwe cricket club Mo Banda says the Foreign Affairs Ministry has consulted with the security in Pakistan and they've advised that it would be unsafe for the Zimbabwean team to tour. In horse racing, Zimbabwe's biggest horse racing event, the $50,000 Castle Tankard, takes center stage at Borodo Racecourse tomorrow with 14 horses on the course. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Cariati.
Sandra Ndebele coming to you live from the Voice of America in Washington, D.C. Now to recap today's top stories. A recipient of the Mandela Washington Fellowship for Young African Leaders says she hopes to benefit from the program, which starts in U.S. next month. And a depleted Warriors side is worried about lack of preparations for the COSAFA tournament. That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Chris Gandhi. This is Gibbs Dube in Washington, D.C.